Welcome to the Teaching Journeys podcast, hosted by Dave Roberts. Humanity possesses a unique skill, the ability to pass knowledge from one generation to the next. This podcast embraces that ability, offering learning opportunities through conversations with extraordinary guests. Dave aims to leave a positive mark on individuals around the world. So before you dive into today's episode, please share this podcast with your network, including friends, family, and colleagues. And please consider leaving a rating or review. Your support makes all the difference.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Teaching Journeys podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts. And today it is my pleasure to have as my guest, Alethea Felton. Alethea Felton is a dynamic motivational speaker, certified transformational coach, founder of the Alethea Felton Coaching LLC, and host of the Power Transformation podcast. With 20 years of experience in the fields of both education and entrepreneurship, Alethea's mission is to help and empower professionals and leaders with chronic illness to live courageously, resiliently, and authentically, so that they can thrive beyond so-called limitations which hold them back from reaching their next personal or professional goal. In this way, they become the best version of themselves in order to create holistic, lasting life success. Alethea's purpose-driven journey was ignited by her transformative personal experiences due to overcoming multiple challenges in her life. Alethea is a sought-after speaker who has presented for medical professionals, patients with chronic illness, patient advocacy groups, and new and veteran teachers. And she has guested on a variety of podcasts and online shows. A native of Southeastern Virginia and former longtime Washington, D.C. resident, Alethea absolutely loves anything related to mermaids. And a huge part of her life is her enjoyment from being a cat mom to Buddy, her playful, cuddly, short-haired American tabby. And you're already good to go, Alethea, because you're a cat person just like me. So with that, I want to welcome you to the Teaching Journeys podcast. I've been looking forward to our conversation for some time now.
Thank you so much, Dave. And the feeling is mutual. You are such an amazing person, and I am honored and grateful that you have me here today. Thank you.
I'm grateful that you're sharing a platform with me today. And I know you're going to be a valued guest contributor, and your journey, your insights, and what you've learned is going to be helpful to many who will be listening to our podcast. So with that, we're going to get right down to it. One of my favorite sayings. Please tell our listeners about the experiences that have shaped your life path and your life passions.
Wow, that's a loaded question, but I love it. So I'm going to consolidate this because I know that you'll have follow-up questions. But what has really shaped my life path and passions and just overall journey have been a multitude of just challenges that I've gone through in my life. And it's interesting, when I say challenges, I didn't necessarily view them as life-changing until recent years. But I would say that the main area that has really transformed me has been the fact that I was born with chronic illness, literally born with autoimmune disease, born with a compromised liver. I always say up front, it was nothing that my parents did. It's not something that they were at fault for that caused this. It's just that I was born as a baby with a defective liver, a severe case of jaundice. And that set a path and a road for me to have sickness throughout my life. I'll be 43 in August, and I've literally overcome and thrived beyond multiple health challenges. Later on in my life, I was diagnosed with Crohn's disease, which actually runs on my mom's side of the family with some males in her family. And in terms of the liver, that took a long time to diagnose. And what was ultimately discovered at first was autoimmune hepatitis type 1, which is a condition in which the liver fights itself. These are autoimmune illnesses with no cure. But Dave, ironically, There's no trace of the autoimmune hepatitis in my blood anymore. Doctors can't explain that. However, I do have a condition with which I was diagnosed officially in 2017 called primary sclerosing cholangitis. And with that, that is a slow hardening of the bile duct, a very rare condition. And I've lived with cirrhosis of the liver for quite a while. But what's interesting, why I have a smile on my face, is I have a liver transplant doctor, and I'm watched and monitored closely by that transplant team at Georgetown University Hospital. However, I'm not sick enough to qualify for a transplant yet. I don't exhibit signs or symptoms needing a transplant as of yet. And Dave, the reality is I may never need to have a transplant. That's what my hope is. So that, in terms of my chronic illness, has shaped me. I had brushes with death. I almost transitioned into hospice in 2012. I've had literal near-death experiences where I've seen things in the supernatural. And that has been a core aspect of it, as well as I've had grief that has hit me where I lost two of my best friends due to them having cancer at young ages. So if you take those combined, those have really shaped my journey. And with me doing the speaking, had a severe speech impediment, stuttering as a child. I still stutter, but somehow I've managed to do well in the speaking world despite the speech impediment. So that's everything in bulk are the main things that have shaped my journey, path, and passion.
That's a mouthful. And that's a lot of very diverse challenges. Mm-hmm. What strategies have you found helpful to achieve your goals, to keep a really positive outlook? Because that's one thing I know about you, is your outlook is very positive. And a lot of individuals who have had the challenges that you've had may just decide to pack it in and really not show the gratefulness that they have for life. So with that, what strategies have you found to be helpful for you to achieve your goals in the midst of the challenges that you face in your life?
Thank you, Dave. I'm asked that quite a bit from, and I'm just not talking about on platforms as these, just in my own personal life, I'm asked this a lot. And I would have to say that my faith is really a huge core aspect. And this is what I mean by the word faith. I consider myself a Christian, a follower of Jesus Christ. And I believe in Jesus' teachings and tenets and principles of the Bible, okay? However, when I say that as well, what I simply mean by that is I have had, ever since I was a child, just a very intimate walk with the spiritual realm, so as to speak. What I mean by that is, as a girl, even before I was necessarily indoctrinated in my beliefs, I just always had a sense of being one with nature, always loving the outside, finding peace and tranquility. I always felt covered and protected. And the more I studied different spiritual practices, even outside of Christianity, I saw this common theme and thread of this divine source or essence that I call God, as being love and being comfort and being peace. And so as I grew up, my parents always tried to instill a sense of normalcy in me. And so the strategies and techniques that I use, even as a kid when I didn't feel well, was, you know what? I can do this. I've got this. And I believed that God was going to give me strength, because I was always brought up knowing that I'm God's child. So Dave, my mindset was, if I'm God's child, even before I knew what DNA was, I always thought, okay, if I'm God's child, then I have a part of God in me. And so with that being said, I just felt like, if I'm God's child, then I've got a piece of God in me, so I can overcome anything. And it didn't mean everything in my life was going to go right, but I just had this strategy of just believing that I could still muster up a bit of strength to just conquer whatever I needed to conquer. And I'd like to also add that throughout my life, it's been pretty much normal, I guess. I had a 20-year career as a public school educator, everything from teaching to leadership roles in school, ended my career in human resources, coaching and training, evaluating other teachers, retired early at age 41. I was national board certified. I had my principal's license. I did part-time catering. I traveled the world. I've done all this stuff in my life where despite these challenges, I just always had a strategy of I'm going to believe, I'm going to keep going. So that was one. And then another strategy is my support system. Not only expecting people to do things for me, but I believe big in karma, law of attraction, reaping and sowing, whatever you want to call it. But I believe what we put out in the atmosphere is what we get back. So I've always been surrounded by just supportive people. But in my times of health, I also try to do the same for others, not even expecting anything in return, but just knowing that the world is a better place when we're there to support each other. So faith and pouring into my support system have really been my two strategies that have guided me along this journey.
Yeah, I think when we have faith, we feel connected, whether it's through religion, whether it's through spiritual practices, or through a combination of both, because it's what you believe.
Yes.
But when we are connected to something that's greater than ourselves, that just gives us, empowers us to, because we know we're going to have support in terms of dealing with our challenges. And it's protective against so many things. Anybody that has, I think, a sense of spirituality or a sense of religious belief and practice, it's protective against mental illness. It improves physical health care outcomes. Because as human beings, Alethea, we can't exist on an island by ourselves. We need the support of others. We need to feel that there's something greater than ourselves so we can connect to, so that we have purpose in our lives, so that we can go on. And without that, individuals can become, I think, very empty, and they can experience a lot of both physical and mental health challenges as well.
And Dave, let me say something to make this clear to your audience as well, because I'm very empathetic and I understand that a lot of people have different viewpoints. Let me make this clear, because sometimes what I've seen even as a turnoff for some people when it comes to even Christianity is that I've seen some Christians act as if everything has been roses and sunshine and great and this and the other. And that's not the reality. That's not even what our Bible teaches us. But what I want to share is I don't want anybody walking away from here thinking that I didn't have those angry days, that I didn't have those sad, depressed days, been in consistent therapy for several years. Especially when the grief came. And I've been in some really dark places. It was something I really don't talk about a lot, but I have talked about it on one or two podcasts. But in my very early 20s, I had a failed suicide attempt. And that was based from a breakup, a horrible engagement that ended when I was young. I was really, really young. And that also catapulted me. I don't talk about that a lot, not out of shame. It's just that I'm healed from it. I don't think about it a lot. But even people that have a firm rooted sense of spirituality, and I'll speak from my experience, I am one of the firmest foundation believing in incredible dreams and impossibilities. But even I had times in my life, Dave, where I hit rock bottom, where I couldn't see the forest from the trees, where it was nothing but darkness. But yet, even in the midst of that, I still had a little glimmer of hope that things would get better, but I couldn't do it by myself. I just couldn't pray all of my problems away. I couldn't just pray and cast out and all that kind of, no, I had to get help. And that what has also contributed to who I am today.
And I'm glad it was a failed suicide attempt, because the world would be a less of a better place without you in it. So I'm glad it was a failed attempt, Alethea.
Indeed. Thank you.
You're welcome. And the second thing, and I think this is something I always like to pass on to the audience, is the deepest spiritual work we do isn't necessarily the prettiest work that we do. It always stems from crisis. It stems from tragedy. It stems because we're spiritual beings living a human experience. And the human experience is sometimes not a pretty one. And how we transcend those challenges dictates how we move through in life and how we look at life moving forward. And again, relationship breakups, particularly for young adults, can be very traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
And if you take a look at suicide attempts now today, I think it's the number two cause of death among young adults who are 10 to 24, I believe.
Wow.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Wow.
And there was another survey I saw, I think it was a Pew Research survey back in 2019, that the number one concern for teens 14 to 17 are depression and anxiety. And those are two conditions, two challenges that are positively correlated with suicide attempts. And relationship breakups tend to be very traumatic for especially first-time relationships.
I was young. Yeah, I was really, really young. This was over 20 years ago. I'll be 43, as I said. This was 20 plus years ago now. And it was the manner of it and everything. It was an engagement breakup over the phone. Yeah. And then after it happened, a lot of lies were spread. And that was just a lot. But I think that the beauty of it now is the peace I've had for all of these years and just knowing that there is light and sunshine after the rain. And so even with subsequent relationships, I've never fallen that hard, but it can be truly traumatic, especially when there are other layers that have formed that.
Yeah.
So I'm just grateful to be in this place and space that I am, and I'm able to give hope to other people. And that's not something that I talk about because I don't think it's really shaped me as much. Maybe it has, I don't know. But I just know that experiencing grief and really going through these health challenges have really catapulted my life. And they've really been blessings in disguise more than anything else.
Yeah. And I think when we have an opportunity to look back on those, we see the blessings, we see the yin and the yang of every experience that we've had.
Yes.
And we may not see it at the time because we're immersed in it, but as we have a chance to reflect and look back, we end up seeing the total picture. The other thing, when you mentioned having near-death experiences where you separated from your body and you saw another dimension, I would imagine that had a transformative experience for you too in terms of what you valued after the experience, how your priorities shape. It seems like people come back profoundly changed after having a near-death experience. I guess I wanted you to allude to that, if you don't mind, in terms of after you experienced that, those, what changed for you? How did your mindset change? How did your belief system change? What did you value after having those experiences?
Yes, and thank you for emphasizing the pluralism of them, because I've had three literal near-death experiences. And the first time I was young, I was 16, I had an asthma attack in my sleep, and I saw angelic beings. And that was very comforting, ethereal, everything. And all I felt was this presence of just comfort and peace and excitement and love and joy and all of the good feels. And when I was told specifically not yet, I still longed to be in that presence, to be in that space, but it wasn't my time. So when I came back and I slammed back into my body or my shell, I immediately, especially at 16, I knew it was real. And my father happened to still be awake. At the time back then, he was such a night owl. And this happened on a school night, but I popped out of bed. I heard the television on the living room. I immediately told my dad what had happened. I took my asthma treatments and stuff. He was really concerned about my breathing. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. are you okay? Do you need to go to the hospital? Blah, blah, blah. But what happened was, it's interesting. Those experiences are supposed to shape you. But Dave, what happened to me, it was quite the opposite at first. I told my father, told my mom, told some people close to me who believed me. But what happened was I was so excited, I started sharing it with different people in terms of classmates or others that I thought were Christian like me. And some people didn't believe it because they got caught up in semantics in the Bible, where there's a scripture, don't quote me on the exact verse, but how some people just think, and some people in Christianity think, that when you die, you sleep, and then when Christ comes back, you rest from the dead. That's not my viewpoint. And I believe after we transition, we're automatically in the presence of God, in the presence of the divine. And so what happened was, I got shut down by some people in my own faith who didn't think I was telling the truth. I had one classmate, never forget it. I saw three angels. Two were in the shape of what we would call male. Another was in the shape of what we would consider a female. Mm-hmm. One of my classmates back then, when I was in high school, literally looked at me with a straight face and said, you couldn't have seen angels because in the Bible, all of the angels are men. And I was like, wow. So for years, I didn't say anything about it until my mom said, don't let anybody shut down. She said, the Bible does not explain everything. This is what my mom said. She said, it doesn't explain everything. There are going to be certain things we're just not going to know. And I had people challenging me as to if I saw Jesus. And I said, no, I didn't see Jesus, but it couldn't have happened. In none of my near-death experiences, Dave, have I seen a figure who's considered Yahshua or Jesus. And my logic is, it's because I'm not dead yet, like I haven't died. But also, to me, that part doesn't matter because what I saw was real. I've experienced in the subsequent two where I was actually in a dimension where I saw a different world, and it wasn't a dream. The colors were more vibrant. They were similar to what we have on Earth, but they were more vibrant. There were some hues that I can't literally put into human word. And in those cases, I saw what were considered spirit guides. I saw presence of people who were loved ones who had passed on, but they didn't look exactly like they did here. They were all kind of like in the same age range and at their healthiest, maybe like early 30s. So an elderly loved one that I knew here on Earth, she greeted me in one of the experiences. And I knew it was her, but she looked different and looked alive and vibrant. My experiences there, I was an adult when the subsequent two happened. And from those, I always came back feeling a longing, a sense of wanting to be there, but then a sense of time is of the essence. And I needed to really live a fulfilled life so that I can accomplish what I need to do over here. So I had a mixture of emotions. When I was young, that was a lot for me as a young person, as a teenager, to handle because I encountered a lot of skeptics. But as I got older, I was like, forget what anybody else thinks. I know what I experienced and I know what I saw was real. And it made me feel more of a rush. And I have to be careful with me sometimes, Dave, because due to those experiences, I can get sometimes in a panic, like I got to do X, Y, Z, X, Y, Z before my life is over. I'm not afraid of death. It definitely causes me to not be afraid of death at all, where I'm just like, hey, I embrace it when the time comes, but I don't want to leave this realm with my work undone. And I say this realm because of my experiences, I saw different places. And I'm the kind of person, I don't believe in just one one literal heaven, the way that I believe is that there are different dimensions, different realms. We can go to various ones. We can teleport to different ones. I have a really outside of the box view of those dimensions based on what I've seen. They weren't the same, but in all of them, very pleasant experiences. And then the key thing is that I never saw in the subsequent two, I never saw a sun. It was just light present everywhere that I can't explain. And it's, I still get those warm and fuzzy feelings now, but those changed my life where I have such peace about my life, but I also have this urgency that I need to get stuff done. And I got to be kinder to myself and patient because I can get frustrated if I have a goal and a target and it's postponed a little bit where I'm like, oh my gosh, I was supposed to get this done by then. And I got to just breathe and say, okay, going to get done as it has to. So that's what it does for me. It was beautiful, but it's caused me to be a bit more like, oh, I got to get something done. Yeah.
Yep. And I align with your perception and beliefs on which is as various dimensions in the spiritual world that we ascend to. Mm-hmm. I think we will ascend to where we're supposed to. We continue to evolve in our new existence and we continue to grow spiritually and we continue to develop. The features that you described of your near-death experience are so consistent with what other individuals have experienced. And the first near-death experience, I think, was documented back in the late 1800s.
This
is according to the International Association for Near-Death Studies.
Okay.
And there's been so much phenomenological research that's been done with individuals who've experienced near-death experiences. The features that they have described have been so consistent that there's no question now in terms of whether or not they exist. Mm-hmm. They're seen as being a very legitimate phenomenon and something whose existence is no longer questioned. And as I was listening to you, I'm saying, yeah, what you experienced was very consistent with others who have described similar near-death experiences. And thank you for sharing that, Aletheia.
You're welcome. It is my honor to share those. And just as I said earlier, yes, I consider myself a Christian, but again, I believe in the followings and the teachings of Christ, his divine nature. But I am the type of person who, with my experiences, I just can't sit here and just say, yeah, it's just this one aspect of it, because things I've seen and I've experienced and others outside of my faith have seen other similar things. I just have a different view when it comes to spirituality. And I'm comfortable saying that I don't consider myself religious. I don't. I do consider myself more spiritual based on how the Holy Spirit speaks to me, how it works through me, things that I've seen and have just experienced, is that I understand who I am as both equally human, but also spiritual as well. Is that we, just as you said, we are spiritual beings living in this type of human existence.
Yeah. And spirituality is so individualized anyway that it's my job is not to judge whether or not your path is right for you, because you know your path is right for you. Mm-hmm. But my obligation as a fellow human being is to hold space for what you believe, understand it, understand the influences that got you to that point, and see what I can learn from it by listening to your path. And I think vice versa. So often we try to judge in terms of, well, my path is better than yours. No, every path works for everybody. As long as you're not hurting yourself or somebody else in the process.
That's right.
Doesn't matter. My job is to, and my obligation is to understand and align with that and to hold space for it. So
beautifully said. Yeah.
Thank you. In your website, in the My Story section on your website, I read where you mentioned, "My imagination runs wild with believing that impossibilities can very well become realities. How has the power of imagination allowed you to co-create the life of your choosing amidst the challenges that you have experienced throughout your life?
That's an excellent question, Dave. Oh, I've never been asked that. I love that question. And thank you for taking a look at my website. It's actually about to be updated. So I'm glad that was actually still up there. So thank you. And I'll try to keep my answers brief. And pardon me if I'm elaborating too much. It's just that I have such a loaded story.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of my imagination, the way it's helped me to co-create is I'm a visionary type of a person. And so what I just think of in my mind, I put it into words or in pictures, and then I make sure that it happens. Oh, I'll give you an example.
Hold on.
I keep this in front of me. And this, you can see all of these little, you know, things, right? This is my interpretation of a vision board, right? So I did this January of 2023. There's a group that I'm a part of, and we work on our inner health, our inner fitness. It's called the Inner Fitness Project. And it's led by a woman named Tina Lifford, who's also a television actress. But in this realm, she works on us getting our inner fitness healthy, because we always talk about physical fitness, but what about inner fitness? Anyway, I bring that up because I decided on my own to create this. This was a vision board that I created in January of 2023, where instead of putting the pictures here on the outside, I put words of all of the goals that I wanted to accomplish. Now, Dave, the reason I bring this up and why it's so perfect with what you are saying, fast forward now to summer of 2024, none of this was accomplished when I did it. As of now, about, I would say almost half of what I have up here is already accomplished. And I still have more than I'm going to do. Then I also did what's called a vision book, where that's where I have the pictures and all of that good stuff. So I share this audience and with you, Dave, is that in my imagination, I believe literally in what I envision, writing it down, looking upon it, not using it as a checkoff list, but the power of imagination has allowed things to manifest in my life without me even thinking about doing it. It just becomes a part of me. So I do believe in the impossibilities aspect of it. So that is what happens in my process, is the way that I imagine things to happen. I'm just crazy enough to just think that anything good out of my life, I can will it along with God's strength and help to actually happen. And it's worked for me. So even those times back in the day, when I was sick, my last hospitalization was 5 years ago. And even those times, Dave, where I was critical in the hospital and they weren't sure what they were able to do for me, I remember sitting in a hospital bed where people had to come help wash me, change me. And I just said, no. In my mind, I saw myself talking and walking and running and speaking and all of this. And I just somehow made those things happen as I got out of it. It's hard for me to explain the full process of it, but I have seen a connection between writing down goals and then they happen just over time. And I hope that kind of answers your question, but that's the power of imagination for me.
Essentially, you use that to manifest what you want to create for yourself in the universe. And I'm sure you teach your individuals who request services from you to do the same thing in your coaching practice.
Yes, I'm big on vision casting. Big on vision casting. And yes, you are right in terms of, and this was like before pre-pandemic things. So this I did January 2023, but even pre-pandemic, I was just always doing this visionary type of work. And I'm not the kind of person that does vision board every year. I don't do that. I know some people do, which is great, but I don't do them every year. I just do them when I feel that the time and the essence is right. And then I just let time have its way and I glance upon it and I look and I'm shocked myself when I see certain things. And in terms of the people that I help, yes, I help them shift their mindset and their thinking about their circumstances and their situations. And even my coaching platform over the years has evolved and will continue doing so. But you're right, is that while you may be in this particular situation now, let's think of things that might not be limitations. When you live with chronic illness or some type of a challenge like that, it is so easy to put self-imposed or societal imposed limitations on your life. And I have just always refused to do that. I have been a rebel in that area where you're not going to limit me to what I can and cannot do. Sure, it might take a little longer. Sure, I may need to rest and relax some. I might not be able to grind and hustle as long as I want to in a given day, but you're not going to thwart my dreams. And so that's what I try to teach and show everybody else.
And I think it's great because too often we buy into what society's perceptions of our limitations are. Mm-hmm. And we need to look within ourselves because the answers lie within. We need to take a look at ourselves and say, do I want to buy into society's limitations or do I want to achieve my true potential? And is the sky the limit? And can I transcend what society believes I can't do? Mm-hmm. Let me show you what I can do. But it also takes, I think, some individuals, supportive individuals, to nurture that as well, too, especially during times when we question our ability to transcend those limitations.
Yeah. And now I'm putting more of an emphasis, of course, I still coach, but just in alignment with my imagination, I am shifting yet again and constantly evolving where I'm putting more emphasis on landing more speaking engagements and doing more workshops and keynote speaking and public speaking and things of that nature so that I can show people in different workshops or realms or speeches on, yes, as a motivational speaker, it's just not all about making you feel good, but it's about giving you tangible techniques and steps and strategies, showing that even if you aren't somebody that lives with a chronic illness, we all go through something in our life as human beings. And so when I speak, I get people to the core of what it is they want to change within their own respective lives and how to go about doing it. And shifting your mindset is just one way. I know that we talk a lot nowadays about mindset, but this type of work, I know I've been doing mindset work and transformational work for many years. And I do things from the holistic standpoint of mind, body, spirit, and more because we are such layered beings. But in my speeches, I do try my best to emphasize the importance of what is it in your life you want to change and what goal do you want to reach? What's keeping you stuck from getting there? And what do you need to do to get unstuck so that those chains metaphorically on you can be released? It works. It definitely works, but it must take the participant being willing to come in with a little bit of an open mind. They don't have to be completely there yet, but at least be willing to receive what's being told and be willing and have the courage to take something that I've shared and to apply it. It does work. I have the testimonial from people who have told me that it works, and I've experienced it for myself.
And you're right. I think individuals need to go into any type of relationship, whether it's a therapeutic relationship, a coaching relationship, with an open mind. Mm-hmm. Our job is to plant seeds. Our job is to give individuals options. Our job is to help them see the consequences of their behavior and have them choose their consequences, even if those consequences may not bear fruit initially. We need to empower them to find their way in the world. But we also, and I think you mentioned this, we also have to give them tangible tools. A lot of times people will come into a relationship and they'll say, I want to change, but I don't know how. Mm-hmm. And we have to listen to that, because if they've come from an unhealthy family situation where healthy communication, healthy expression of feelings wasn't modeled, health and coping skills wasn't modeled, they certainly don't know how to change. So yes. We have to find out what is missing in your toolbox. What resources can we give you? Because once we plant those resources, they have an opportunity to look at them. They become empowered. The tools that they begin to apply gives them insight into what they need to do moving forward. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we try to get to the insight-oriented stuff first before we give them the tools to get there.
Yeah, I do agree with that, is that those types of relationships also must be partnerships, because as a part, and I've been on the other side of both as a coach and as the one being coached in different aspects of my life. And I always say, be coachable or be trainable or be teachable. And that comes even from my background as a former teacher and educator. Also, is that with me having the gift and the ability to show people, I was never even the kind of teacher who was a lecturer. I made my students to be active participants in their learning, because this was their learning. I trained them on how to question even me as the adult in the room. If I didn't know something, I would tell them, I don't know, but I'll find out. But also, once I gave them more power and ownership of their own learning and their process, that's when the results happen. And in the same way is how adult learners work. So even when I worked with adults in my field, and even now in this new aspect, when I go into these speeches, I have to understand that everybody is coming from a different background, the same as I would in a coaching session. Everybody has different experiences. My experience isn't their own. But when we can be collaborators together, then that's when the true transformative change can happen. And it does.
Thank you, Alethea. One of my last questions for you is, would you want your legacy to be defined by happiness or genuineness?
Genuineness. All the way genuineness. Yeah.
I would agree. And I've gotten into this on other podcasts where I think a lot of times we individuals will buy into society's narrative that happiness is the key to fulfillment. I think being genuine with all of our emotions are, that leads us to become authentic. And I think authenticity beats happiness any day of the week. So
yes, that's what I was about to say, is that I would rather it be genuine, authentic, because I think that's when happiness is. So this is just my opinion. I think there's a difference between being happy and having joy. I've always viewed happiness as a temporary type of emotion. Some days you're happy, some days you aren't. Joy to me is a more consistent type of a feeling. But I think that genuineness is who you are, what is what you get. And I think a person who has more genuineness behind them, they actually can make others feel better about themselves. I choose genuineness because I've met other genuine people in my life. You're one of the most genuine people I've met. And just when a person's genuineness is shown towards me, it can't help but make me more genuine. You want people to walk away and to remember you for being somebody that made them feel like they were worth something, that made them feel like they had a voice, that made them feel as if they mattered. And so I think being genuine and being authentic is really key. And especially, although your podcast global, just like mine, especially with the climate in our country right now, we need more genuine people than anything, because we know how contentious our society is right now in the political realm. And I think that when we take off these layers of what's your political party, What's your race? What's your socioeconomic status? What is your gender, sexual orientation, income? When we remove those and just see us for who we are, I'm going to not think about, oh yeah, the person who helped me was this X, Y, and Z Democrat or Republican. That's not what's going to matter. It's going to be about what did they do to genuinely give of themselves in order to make another person's life better and more effective. What tools did they help to give to make me more resilient, to make me say I can live another day, to make me say, yeah, I can't just hoard all the knowledge that I have. I need to share it. So that's why I'd rather it be genuineness, is that I want to leave this earth one of these days with someone saying, Alethea made my life better in the fact that now I know how to pay it forward to someone else. That's how we keep that cycle going.
Yeah, and that's how we build a common thread of connection among difference, because when we strip down the differences, we can realize that there are more similarities than we even anticipated. So thank you for that, Alethea.
Yes, agreed.
My last question for you today, and I could go on for another hour with you.
I know, I love talking to you.
Same here. If our listeners want to contact you, find out about additional resources you provide and about your podcast, which is the Power Transformation Podcast, how can they do that?
Thank you. So I'll start with the podcast. The Power Transformation Podcast is available on all podcast apps, all podcast platforms. It's audio only for right now, but in the fall, I'm going to also be converting to video. So uploading video, not with all of the podcasts, because I want to be respectful for some past guests who I haven't told that it's going to be video, but for the newer ones coming up, starting in the fall, approximately September, those are going to be available also on YouTube. So if you Google search the Power Transformation Podcast or look on Apple, anything like that, or you can search on Buzzsprout, that's where you will find that. I do have a website. Now, let me preface this. I am going through the process now of revamping my website. So my website is shifting, but it is still active. AletheaFelton.com, www.AletheaFelton.com. Be careful on the spelling, because a lot of people default to say Althea. It's Alethea, Aletheafelton.com. Felton.com. I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me as Alethea Felton. I'm on Instagram at Alethea Felton. I'm on TikTok, not a huge following yet on TikTok, at Alethea Felton, and Facebook as well. So you can pretty much find me anywhere. Do a Google search, Alethea Felton, and a lot of my different platforms will pop up there. But when you go to my website, what I would like you to do, although my website is being updated and a landing page is going to be there soon, sign up for my newsletter. I give a weekly newsletter where a lot of important announcements are going to be coming. I'm trying to build up more of my email list. So that's what I encourage you to do. And I'm always available specifically for speaking engagements. Please contact me, or if you want coaching, contact me so we can have a free discovery call so that I can help you even more.
Thank you, Alethea. And all
Thank
of that,
you.
You're welcome. All of that will be in the program notes on both, when it drops on both YouTube and at RSS.com. So with that, thank you so much for being a valuable guest contributor on the podcast today. I truly enjoyed our conversation and look forward to having more.
Thank you, Dave, and I feel the same way. I truly appreciate you.
Thank you. That is a wrap on another episode of the Teaching Journeys Podcast. I'm your host, Dave Roberts, wishing you peace.